Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Insider. It's part two of the amazing interview with Mark Paul. Now, Mark Paul's masterclass started yesterday, so you can go along to the website and buy just Mark Paul's masterclass if you want, or the sensible money is when you subscribe to VI Plus. This will give you all of the masterclass lectures. It will give you VI Studio, which is our highly curated streaming library, and you'll get free shipping with no minimum spend. So if you just want a thumb tip or a bit of flash paper, deck of cards, we'll get that out to you with no charge at all for the postage. Now, not all free shipping is created equal. There are some free shippings that take many weeks to get that. Our free shipping's fast. So there you go. Mark Paul, Masterclass. VI Plus is the most cost-effective way to get access to it. Enough of my yapping. Let's go on and see what Mark Paul's got to say for himself. We had that there, Hector Chadwick, on the show last week, and I asked him a question that I'm going to ask you as well.
Okay.
Which is, what aspect of mentalism would you put into room 101?
What a brilliant question. That's great. There's quite a few things, actually. One thing that pops to mind, all right, one thing that pops to mind is sometimes we're very hung up on methods. So for example, thumb writer, the Swami gimmick, what a brilliant tool, fantastic idea, brilliant, you know. Mark Salem uses it to open his show, and it's a brilliant piece where he leaves the stage, he goes into the audience, and it's quick fire mind reading with a pencil and a pen and moving around. So first pet hate is the type of performer that actually uses nail writing on stage, and then the next routine they do, so they're writing a little tiny prediction on a little square of card. And then the next routine, they pull out a massive, big, easel with a big marker pen. And it's like, hold on, no, why? Why have you just used this tiny little thing? Why didn't you write it big so we could see what it was, you know? So sometimes, you see, we don't think. We just go, I want to do a nail writer effect.
Yeah.
We do a nail writer effect. And it's like, no, it's... Yeah, nail writer is perfect for close-up. I think it's a great tool. And Mark Salem does it very well because he makes it intimate. He makes it a close-up piece as part of his
plays for the theatre
show. Yeah, and he leaves the stage when he does it. And I think my pet hate is that use the tool that is right for the environment. So if you are working on a stage for a 1,000-seat theatre, I know not many people do, a nail writer and a piece of card, that's not right. That's not the right tool for that environment. So that's one thing that sort of popped into my head. I think another little pet hate possibly is this massive, or it's got less actually, this massive drive towards propless mentalism. The idea that actually a trick is no good if you have to have visible compromise. If you have to have a book or a piece of paper and a pencil, suddenly the mind reading experience is eroded because you've introduced visible compromise. You know, so mind reading should be pure. Somebody should think of something and you should tell them what it is. Do you know what? That's actually the most boring thing you could ever do.
It tends to be heavy on procedure, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can make the procedure entertaining and engaging as part of it. You can also make the procedure more, it makes the effect more impossible. I'll give you an example to sort of illustrate this. So you're doing a word test and you're going to use a book to have the word selected. Now, maybe somebody who's into their propless mentalism will say, well, no, you should just think of a word and I should divine it. And there are various possible methods for doing that, from psychological forces to
progressive
anagrams of some sort or whatever. So you do that. Now, the first thing is, some of the propless methods, they're a little bit convoluted. So you lose clarity of plot. The second thing is, let's say we have a propless method that's really clean. The problem is how does that look to an audience?
Hmm.
Well, let you think of something. I now reveal what you're thinking. To the general public, this is a setup. This is something that happened before that. And the reality is it probably is. There might have been some sort of pre-show work. They don't know the details, but just on a simple, logical approach to solving the problem, there is a setup here. This guy's a stooge. Something's going on I don't know about.
Right.
On the other hand, let's look at a book test. So let's say we've got Mother of All Book Test, which is a very clean book test, very clever method. I'm sure Vanishing Inks sell it, probably. I'm sure they did it at one stage. It's quite an old trick now. But here's the beauty of this. You can hand someone a book. Okay, and I'm traveling a lot. So I say, you know, I've grabbed some books from the library off the ship. Here are some books. Pick one of them. They're picking Mother of All Book Tests at this point. And I say, okay, open it up to any page you like. That's a random place. You might think maybe, you know, somebody's opened that book a lot of times at that page, so you can flick on a few pages or back a few pages. And now, happy with that page? Great. Now, have a look around the page and choose a single word. You know, to make it difficult, choose a long word, something a bit challenging. You know, don't choose a word like and or the. Have you got a word in mind? Something a bit trickier, you know, longer word? Great. Fantastic. Close the book up. Now, what you've done there, you've gone through the procedure, but the procedure has heightened the effect of what you're trying to achieve. You see, that procedure is incredibly fair. And the audience has seen that fairness. So now when you reveal the word the person's thinking of, the effect is actually much more ramped up. So although we've gone through procedure and we've definitely introduced visible compromise, I feel it's a better effect. I feel the impact on an audience is better. And I know it is because that's my experience of doing it. If I do something clean via possibly pre-show or some electronic device or something like that, and I've got other things where there is a clean, fair procedure that goes into it, then actually I prefer the procedure. I prefer the audience knowing what's going on, showing that it's incredibly fair, and showing them how impossible it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You're taking them on a journey. And another great example, I watched on the there's a clip on the internet of Robert Harbin doing the zigzag in like 1967 on the Palladium stage. This was just after The Illusion was created. It's a genius piece because a modern illusionist performs it with rock music going on in the background and spinning the box and jumping around and all this. Harbin didn't do any of that. Harbin performed it as a patter piece. It was about 12 minutes long. And he gets up, someone from the audience, they examine the box, his assistant gets in the box, the person from the audience helps Harbin put the blades through the box. They help him push out the middle of the girl. They check her face is still real. They check that her tummy is still real. You know, her hands, her feet. They shake hands between the space, you know, in the space where it is, proving there's no mirrors. Everything Harbin does is disproving something that someone in the audience is thinking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So by the end, you have this utter miracle that there's no explanation for. And it's brilliant. And that's all procedure. It's procedure, but the procedure adds to the effect. Just like in that book test example, the audience is aware of everything. They're aware of where that word comes from. And if you can justify it, if you say something like, sometimes, you know, when you ask people to think of words, they tend to go within a range of about sort of 20 familiar words. So actually, I want you to choose a random word, you know, so you're that makes sense as well. So, you know, here's some books, just open it up any page, get a word, we're off. So this idea of propless mentalism, I think, is going from a false perspective. I think this idea that propless is purer, but not necessarily better. I don't purity of effect you lack everything. It's we want to go on the journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Performance is about storytelling. It's about the journey. It is not just the end result. You don't buy a book and turn to the last few pages and read those to see what happens. You read a book to go on the journey with the author. So populist mentalism, I think, there is some clever populist mentalism out there. So don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing the whole genre. But I think, you know, I think part of that needs to go in room 101 without a shadow of a doubt.
COVID obviously hit all performers incredibly hard. And I understand that you mainly work cruise ships. How have you had to adapt your set and material during the pandemic?
Well, that, you know, a great, great question. And this was something within, you see, so the pandemic hits in March. Mm. I mean, I was due to be on a cruise ship literally the weekend the American borders closed. And I got a phone call on Saturday to say, you know, I was going out to New York to get a cruise ship that was coming back to Southampton, and it got cancelled on Saturday. And I was meant to be flying on Monday. And on Monday, they closed the American borders. So it was all very instant. And literally about within a month of that, there were already memos going around saying that when cruise ships start up again, and there was a thought that it was going to be in a couple of months' time, you know, that socially, we would all have to be socially distant. In other words, I've made a reputation in the cruise industry. It's a very audience interactive show. You know, it is, I'm a mind reader. I'm booked as a mind reader. It's a mind reading show. I use people during my show. So the memo comes around saying, you know, it's going to have to be socially distant. And it's a bit vague what that means. So over the course of the next month, it crystallizes into what is and isn't allowed. And it basically became no one can come up on stage. You cannot go into the audience. There must be no transfer of any materials between you and an audience member. In other words, you can't hand them a piece of paper and a pencil.
Uh-huh.
You can't hand borrow a banknote from them. There is no physical interaction with the audience. One of the things that was a stumbling block for me was I because these are big theatres, I said, well, I still need to be able to hear them. So if somebody speaks a response, can we get a microphone to them? And the simple answer was no, because we would have to sanitize. That microphone would have to be sanitized between people, and that, you know, that's just going to slow everything down. So the reality was,
blimey,
there is no physical interaction between you and the audience. Now, initially, I probably put my head in the sand and thought, God, I hope that doesn't happen. Let's see how it pans out.
Right.
And then Danny Archer wanted me to do Mindvention, and I'd already been booked to be in Mindvention in November, and he decided to put everything online instead of doing it. He sort of moved it earlier in the year and put it online. And or was it slightly later in the year, but wherever it was, he decided to do it online, and he wanted me to still do a lecture. And I'm like, oh, well, what can I do? And I decided to force myself to take a bit of action, to put a lecture together of material that doesn't require people to come up on stage. And so that was quite an interesting sort of challenge to do. And the lecture went very well. And there were some really good things in it. There were a couple of things that I didn't end up using or anything like that. But, you know, maybe they were interesting ideas. What was interesting, it was very popular lecture with the people watching. And it gave me actually a little core of material. And I thought, well, actually, that's quite nice as well. So maybe I can sort of develop on that. And I'm so pleased that I did, because over the next few months, I sort of put an act together and then thought, well, I'm going to need two 45-minute spots. So I put another act together. And then in October last year, about a month before October, I got a notification that the cruises were starting up again. And in October, that was going to be my first cruise. And I've got two brand new 45-minute shows that I've never done. I've never performed them ever in my life. So I booked a rehearsal space. There's a village hall up the road, and I booked it for, you know, for day long sessions where I could get in there with my props and set everything up. And, you know, and there's a lot of sort of display stands and things, because I've got to display stuff. You know, like, for example, I would do a chair prediction where I'd have people holding envelopes, but I can't have people on stage. So I've got to have a stand that displays that envelope. You know, it's that type of thing. Anyway, so I blocked it all through, rehearsed it, and then in October, both feet in, two brand new shows, and that's what I've actually been doing. And the cruise industry is still like that at the moment. Just before this last cruise, there was a slight relaxation, which was you can now bring people up on stage, but you can have no physical interaction with them.
So
you
no can't hand them anything. No, you can't. Right.
So actually, that's still the same.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed anything. Yes, you can bring someone closer to you.
It's nice to get a reaction, I guess, that the other people can see.
You can do that. You can have, you know, exactly. Your rest of the audience is seeing this person react. So that's how it is at the moment. So we're doing this now in March, and that's how it is. But I see it relaxing as we get further. But it was an interesting challenge to put it all together. And I know a lot of my friends haven't had to have this challenge because they're doing close-up. And in this country, close-up seems to be back to normal. It seems to be okay. And I'm glad it is, you know. But the cruise ship industry, I think, is a little more resistant, you know. And it's more to do with insurance.
Yes.
You know, they're more worried about
Americans.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's this, look, well, you know, we did this, this, and this, so you can't sue us for getting COVID on board. You know?
Yeah. Now, probably most people listening over a certain age will either remember or have seen the famous Parkinson Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, I forget which, from many years ago, where amongst other things, you perform an incredibly clean Any Card at Any Number. Can you talk about that? Why did you choose to do something with such inherent risk? And how did it feel as you were doing it? And what was the reaction like afterwards?
Okay. First of all, what I chose to do was material that I had been doing for years and years and years.
Bulletproof, that, to go back to Nyman's book.
Although a lot of performers look at something like Any Card at Any Number as risky, which it is to a point, I'd actually been doing that routine round tables forever.
Right.
The Parkinson thing, I think, was 2001. And, you know, at this point, I'd already been doing close up professionally full time for about 10 years or just under 10 years. So, and I, as I said, it was busy period of time. And I've always loved jazz card magic. And it comes from seeing David Berglas. He probably kindled that fascination. I love jazz card magic. I'm completely comfortable with jazz card magic. I don't feel it's risky. And in fact, I know we'll talk about the masterclass, but in the masterclass, there is a routine that I teach, which is, you know, I used to do all the time back in the 90s. And it is three utterly impossible card revelations. I mean, it's utterly impossible and incredibly clean. It was basically designed to mimic what David Berglas was doing, but without the 50 years of experience. You know, it was, and I talk all about the history. It's actually based on a very old a card trick called Nemo Card, which is actually in the Encyclopedia of Card Tricks. But it was written up, it's by R.W. Hull. And Nemo Card is actually a deck of cards that is 52 outs. It is this idea that whatever card is named, you have an out. Now, what I talk about on the masterclass is, you know, some of those outs were appalling. You know, they were horrible. You know, and because it's just too many. It's really hard. And obviously then it becomes a memory exercise as to sort of what I, so actually I've streamlined it, and this was something I used to do all the time. So what happens is it becomes, there are two impossible card reveals followed by an any card at any number. That's what the three reveals are. And so that's my background. So when I get asked to do Parkinson, and I was asked, I did a close-up show in Holland Park in London, and somebody asked for my card. She happened to be the producer for Parkinson. And what happened was that Parkinson loves magic.
Clearly.
You know, there are people, there's been people like, I mean, Canasta performed on Parkinson, and he's had people like, you know, Ricciardi Jr. and Ricky Jay and people like that on. Loves magic. And David Blaine was just breaking through and they wanted Blaine. And there was a Christmas special and they wanted Blaine, but then Blaine, and we're 6 months out from the Christmas special. They're just planning it at this stage. And then Blaine goes on to the Eamon Holmes shows and does the look in my hand, you know, and Parkinson, they just decided, no, we don't want him. And I was very lucky because the producer said, oh, well, I saw this great guy at a party, you know, a few months ago. And Parkinson was like, yeah, bring him in. And I literally got a phone call. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like,
oh, my gosh.
So I went in and I did the stuff that I've always done. And Parkinson loved it, and that was it. The rest is history. They were what that really enabled me to do was to, it gave me a little bit of profile. You know, I could put that clip on my website. It enabled me to sort of push my fees up. You know, my agent was obviously promoting it and pushing the fees up off the back of it. And that really helped. So that was the sort of story behind it. And the reality was I actually felt very comfortable doing it because it was material that I'd done literally a million times.
Yeah.
So I don't advocate you go and, you know, do stuff you're unfamiliar with on TV. And actually, in years later, I have done TV projects. And that's what it is. You create material that you've never done before. And then I have to do it on TV.
Yeah.
That's not an environment I felt particularly comfortable in because that's not me. I want to rehearse stuff. I want to know stuff inside and out. So, for me, TV wasn't a great, medium for me personally. As
it does eat material, doesn't it? So.
Yeah, it does eat material. So, I've sort of skirted around any sort of, you know, any idea of methods because I haven't gone into specifics.
Didn't want to.
That's really what it was. So you sort of know what it was. There's a bit of jazz there. So what you saw was a good outcome. You know, you're seeing something. So, yes, I mean, people will go, oh, well, then it's just luck. No, this is not just luck. What this is luck meeting years of preparation. This is because if that didn't happen how it happened, that's fine. You still would have had a miracle happening.
Absolutely.
At the end of that show.
Absolutely.
That you know, I'm going to end on whatever that was going to be. You know, but do check out the masterclass because I think actually the card thing I do in there, that'll give you a real good insight into what my thinking was at the sort of time, really.
So what else are you going to be covering in the masterclass?
So I start with another great passion of mine. We've already sort of touched on it, and that's billet work. Mm. I mean, I just think, you know, there's the sort of cliched phrases, you know, Bob Cassidy says that, billets are the cornerstone of mentalism. And Annemann says that, you know, for every hour you spend rehearsing billet work, you'll be paid back in years of, you know, entertaining fantastic mentalism. And it's like, and those are true. That is absolutely true. You do have to put a little bit of work in up front because you've got to get these switches smooth. But I think for the move junkies out there, it's actually great. You know, I think a lot of people are coming into mentalism because it's easy. And actually, some of these slights are not necessarily straightforward. They're not difficult either, but you've got to sit down and put the work in. You know, you need to get a switch smooth. It can't be, you know, you can't be given away that you've switched the billet. So so I have a billet routine in there. Oh, we can add an extra 101. I've just thought.
Okay.
Oh, 101. Yeah, no, very important 101 that has to go into room 101. Okay. And that is the hokey one ahead principle.
Okay.
Okay. Because I'm sorry, you can't have something, right, I'm going to read your mind. Okay, I've read your mind and I've revealed this amazing information about you. And let me just open this up and just check. Oh, yes, I'm right. Yes, that's good. look, there are some fantastic routines out there that do exactly that. And I am poking a little bit of fun.
Sure.
But we're better than that. I'm sorry, this was a method from the 1920s. Come on, guys, come on. You know, so that sort of one ahead, that I'm sorry, you know, we've got to move on from that. Now, I reckon you can get away with that once in a show. But when you're doing a three envelope test and you do it three times in a row, twice in a row, no, that's just lazy. That's so lazy. So this triple billet test that I teach in the masterclass, it is basically three billets are handed out and it eliminates, in a classic three envelope test, you would normally hand out two billets, then something would happen. Because a method has to happen.
Yeah, teach a bit of method.
But
yeah,
there's this pause in the proceedings before you move to the third person. And you know, for modern mentalism, no, that's no good. We want to hand the billets out, get the information written down, get them back. We need to smooth that. So my triple billet test is they all get handed out. Everybody writes on something all at the same time. They're all collected up and we're into the routine. It's very straightforward and very clean. And those three billets sit on a table. And at no point ever is any of those billets opened up. You know, those billets are not, you do not have what I've just described, which is the, oh yeah, you know, let me just check. Oh yeah, that's right. You know, it's no. What happens is one of them gets picked up and I sense it. I don't look at it. I hold it at arm's length. I just sense it and I sense who it belongs to and I immediately hand it to them. Okay. I hand it to them. They open it up and it is their billet. It is absolutely their billet. And then I can read their mind. I know exactly what's on that billet. So it's very clean and very direct. And if you think it's some sort of peak or something, it's not that, because I think that method possibly is too linear. You know, I'm holding this billet, but my head would be away.
Mm-hmm.
I at no point do I in any way look at that billet. I literally pick it up, I sense it, and I immediately hand it to the correct person, but I know what they're thinking at that point. One of the weeks is entirely on Q&A. I love Q&A. I mean, this is another... I fell in love with it. You know, it again is the, everyone talks about, you know, once you've done Q&A, no other effect is like it. You know, it's the creme de la creme of mentalism. Mm. And again, that's all true, because you stand on stage and you tell people about themselves. And that's what a mind reader should be. It absolutely fits that image I had in my head. Now, there are some problems with Q&A. The problem is the methods are always quite straightforward and linear. They are quite, you know, they're well known and they're out there and it's fine. And the problem is how you do it. Not how you do it from a method point of view, how you present it.
Sure.
Because this is purely you. This is about you standing on stage revealing information. You are exposed. You have to be a strong personality. And the problem with a lot of Q&A is this part isn't addressed at all. It's just you know, let's say it's like a billet Q&A. You're picking up a billet and you sense it and you reveal the information and you dump that and it's correct and you reveal another one. And it's quite repetitive is one thing. And the other thing is it has no structure. It has no
climax.
Upward arc. Yeah, it's not elevating or becoming more impossible or becoming more amazing or anything like that either. It doesn't have any texture in it. I mean, you know, you don't even have to do this. You could go like this. Where you've got variety.
Light and shade.
Going on. What happens is it does that. And or actually, it probably does that, to be honest. You know, it just sort of just, you know. So what I'm teaching is something I've done for, what is it now? It's over 20 years. And this was the close of my show for many, many years. And this is a blindfold Q&A routine. And, you know, method-wise, I'll go through all the methods and the details of the methods. And, you know, if you're an experienced mentalist, you know, you'll know the methods. You know, I've not come up with some revolutionary way of doing Q&A.
Sure.
But what I have come up with is a rock solid structure to the Q&A that you don't deviate from. This is not where you're sent out there and you have no idea what's going to happen, which is a lot of what Q&A is. This is a structure. Now, you can still go off and jazz along a certain line or riff along this line, but you've got a framework that is rock solid that you can return to at any time. And that structure has variety, it has elements of interesting, and it has a climax. So it becomes, you know, much, much more because of it. And basically, it's much tighter. It's you know, I've seen Q&A go on for forever. You know, I mean, half an hour people do Q&A for. This is around about a sort of 15-minute routine, maybe 12 to 15 minutes. And during that time, around about 15 pieces of information are going to be revealed. You're going to be going bam, bam, bam. You know, it's so in other words, you know, each this is like, you know, this came from watching comedians. There are comedians out there that have a strategy. They want a laugh every 30 seconds.
Yes.
You know, and for me, this was the same sort of goal. I wanted the reveals don't happen one a minute. Don't think it's like that. But I'll be standing there and I will, you know, we found someone in the audience that I'm in tune with. And I'll be going, you know, I'm getting their initials, possibly, you know, off of a billet or something. And then I'm revealing their name, their first name. And then I'm revealing their surname. And then I'm revealing, you know, the month they were born in. And then the day in the month they were born in. And then the year and how old they are. And I'll reveal what, you know, what car they drive, what their favorite holiday destination is, or what, you know, whatever theme we're going along. So actually, it's like bam, 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 bam. You know, it's impactful, it's direct. So the structure of it, the way it slots together, and it's practical as well. I mean, it's just a practical system that packs down virtually flat that you can put in a small suitcase, a small briefcase, and off you go, you know. So you have a system for it. So that I'm very proud of. I've never released it before. I've talked about it to close friends, you know, people like Michael Weber and Luke Jermay. This is something I never really performed at magic conventions either.
How exciting.
Obviously, I'll explain more in the masterclass, but hopefully that whets your appetite.
It's certainly whetted my appetite, Mark. Mark, we are horribly over time, but we always end the show with four quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Yes. Okay. I will be short with my eyes. It's me. It's me, Damien.
It's all really interesting. Now it's really interesting. But we have to end at some point, man. Favorite pizza topping?
Oh, good one. You know, people are going to hate me. Tropicana. I do like the pineapple. Okay. Sorry. You know,
no, that's
pineapple,
fine.
Ham and mushroom.
There's no judgment here, man. Favourite movie?
Or if you have me in Italy, then no. It would be rucola and shaved parmesan.
Okay.
Just so the Italians don't kill me. So,
Favourite movie?
Favourite movie? Oh, well, I'm of the age. Star Wars, 1977, I watched Star Wars, God, I don't know, 10 times in a row. It's ingrained on me. I'm very disappointed my son, who's 17, is not into Star Wars. Yeah. I mean,
showed it to my 7-year-old daughter a few months ago and she loved it. So I was
You're like...
Favourite person or people who make music?
Favourite person or people making music? Well, I'm sort of have to go back. I'm sorry, I'm old. Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven.
Okay.
I remember laying on my bedroom floor, listening to that like over and over and over again. And if it ever comes on the radio, I'm transformed back to that moment, this is not a 3-minute track. This is something that goes on for about 14 minutes. And it's amazing. And then, the other one is Pink Floyd's The Wall. Same thing. It's like, I'm just transformed. If I hear that, I'm like 16 again.
And finally, who would you rather fight? One massive Andy or 100 tiny Joshuas?
Ooh, there's a good one. I think I would fight one massive Andy, I think. But I don't know why. I think there's this worrying thought of little tiny Joshuas climbing up my legs and me trying to swipe them off and they're still climbing up. So I think... And I don't like mosquitoes or anything like that. So maybe that's what's guiding me toward. If you'd said one big Joshua.
It changes. It changes with each interview.
As the question was phrased, one big Andy.
Okay, done. Mark Paul, thank you so much for giving us your time. And I very much look forward to learning from the masterclass next month.
Thank you very much, Damien. Thank you for having me on.